This weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Lack of good options. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us, final weekend of July. Coming up this half hour, parents say the thought of virtual learning this fall is creating some anxiety. One reason, finding childcare if mom and dad both work outside the home. Also, families trying to adopt children are in a logistical battle during the pandemic. We'll explain the challenges and heartache. And some purists who love the board game Scrabble have some serious problems with the online version of the game. Hear their complaints. And your investment game plan if you're this close to tapping funds for retirement.
What I really have is four goals. And you know, one of my goals, and I think it's a goal that a lot of people should consider, is generating a stream of income that I can't outlive. The best stream of income that you can't outlive is Social Security, which is why you often see the advice to delay Social Security until age 70 so you get that largest possible benefit.
Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com on today's markets if you're a year or two out from retiring. The coronavirus outbreak has halted most adoptions from outside the U.S., but domestic ones are inching ahead. While procedures vary by state, agency, and family, lockdowns across the country have complicated background checks, home visits, and physicals for prospective parents. Caseworkers and families are relying on workarounds. More from Christina Rexrode, editor at the Wall Street Journal. Christina, what have you found?
There's two different stories here. So domestic adoption, so people who are in the U.S. and they're adopting within the U.S., those are going okay. You know, those families are facing a lot of challenges, like maybe it's harder to get their home study done. Maybe, you know, one of the families I talked to in here, they had to pick the baby was released into their care on the sidewalk outside the hospital where she's just been born 2 days beforehand, you know, and normally that would be in a little bit later at the adoption agency's offices. But in general, after like some maybe a little bit of chaos, you could say, in March, early April, the adoption agencies, families, and so forth have figured out workarounds for getting U.S. adoptions to move forward. International adoptions are a totally different story, and that's where it gets really sad. So if you're a U.S. family and you're in the middle of adopting from outside the U.S., that is basically at a standstill. You know, this family I talked to in North Carolina, they had tickets to fly to China on January 31st. So, of course, that didn't happen. And there are just you could find workarounds for U.S. adoptions, but you really can't find workarounds for most international adoptions.
And this takes time to put together, right? I mean, the adoption of, say, a child from China does not happen in like a month or two, right? I mean, it can be like a year or so of planning, right? And then you've got this mixed in?
Right. So the families that are, for example, this family that I talked to in North Carolina, Kathy and Troy, they're the ones who had tickets to fly on January 31st to China. The people who are adopting, especially internationally, have put a lot of thought and a lot of effort into making it happen and making sure that they can do it.
We're speaking with Christina Rexrode, editor at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Families Persist with U.S. Adoptions. Coronavirus makes it a challenge. You referenced, too, workarounds. And when you say that, and I think of stay home orders and social distancing, I immediately think paperwork. Is that part of what's up here?
Well, so here's an example. So if you are going to have a child released into your care, you have to have a home visit, usually from a social worker. And under normal circumstances, this varies a little state by state and even agency by agency, but under normal circumstances, that social worker will probably visit you a few times would probably do a few in-person interviews. And right now, what adoption agencies tend to be doing, especially in hard-hit areas, is they are doing a lot of the interviewing over, you know, video conference, and then they're just doing a very quick visit to homes for, you know, 5 minutes or so forth. And of course, they're wearing masks, not touching anyone. The adoption agencies I talked to were pretty clear that they did not think that, for instance, that particular change about home visits would be long-term, that they wanted to go back to the old process when coronavirus is over of lots of face-to-face contact with a potential adoptive family.
Is that the item, I guess, that might come back first as restrictions begin to loosen?
One thing that might come back a little earlier is the adoption finalization cases in court. So again, courts vary state by state, maybe even city by city, but a lot of courts are still finalizing adoptions. They're just doing it over Zoom. So you don't get quite the whole same experience of like dressing up and going to the courthouse and bringing balloons and eating cake afterward. But one thing I heard from people repeatedly is that judges really like doing adoption finalization cases. You know, it's one of the happier parts of their job.
Right.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Rexrode, editor at The Wall Street Journal.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
As schools slowly release plans for how they'll educate our children this fall, parents, especially with young kids, are hanging on every detail. They're trying to figure out how they'll manage a return to the office with the potential of having to watch a kid who's taking part in remote learning from home. Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It, says there aren't many good options. Megan, set the scene.
Well, it's just total uncertainty out there for parents right now. We're about a month out from schools reopening in many school districts across the country, and there's still a lot of questions, certainly not only about how the school is reopening. Several districts have already said that they are going to be going with a more blended approach of remote learning and in-classroom instruction part of the time. Some school districts are saying they're going back full-time, you know, no remote learning. And then you have a lot of districts across the country that still have yet to really announce what they're doing for this upcoming school year.
Well, I guess it depends on the family, but I have a hard time trying to guess if the blended approach is better or worse for some parents.
I think it's really stressing parents out. From what I've heard from, you know, both parents in New York and other areas of the country that are having to deal with these more remote school reopening plans, it just brings up the case of what are you going to do with the kids on the days that they're not in the classroom? Are you going to have to go out and find additional childcare, either put them in some kind of daycare that has a program where, you know, they'll sit and learn with the kids? Are you going to have to hire a nanny? Are you going to have to do a babysitter? Or are you going to have to take time away from the workplace? Because as many parents have said repeatedly throughout this pandemic, you just can't do both long term. It doesn't work.
We're speaking with Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It, and she's written a piece entitled Parents Say School Reopening Plans Leave Them Without Any Good Options. There was a family you spoke to, I think they were from New York City, and they said in order to possibly make this work, they might have to leave the city. What is their situation?
Yes, no, and they were not the only ones. I know of several families that have sort of started talking about the fact that being in New York City and doing this blended program of learning that the school district has announced is just not going to work for them. And so, you know, they're looking at moving closer to family, possibly in other states, to try to make sure that they can shore up some kind of child care plan for the days that they may not be in class.
Mm. Well, there was one mom, I think, who said something along the lines of, I can only read the school plans a little bit at a time because it makes her so anxious.
I absolutely love talking to Ruth. She's actually really involved in this topic. She's part of Moms Rising, which is a wonderful advocacy group. And she just really hit the nail on the head with the anxiety that parents are facing here. You know, even for parents who, quite frankly, are going back full time, there's a lot of concern about the safety of these, you know, programs, not only just social distancing and, you know, making sure that school districts have PPE, which, of course, as we all know, is really hard to come by right now, but also just, you know, having kids in the classroom for so many hours a day. There's certainly going to be challenges, you know, when we talk about having them come back from such a long period away from the classroom. There may be some behavioral issues and certainly some slump, if you will, in terms of the learning.
Boy, moms, women seem to be taking this harder than others, correct?
I think it's not just women, although certainly women are definitely going to be taking the hit here, but also, you know, those of color and, of course, you know, anyone who, you know, is on the lower side of the income scale. Those three metrics seem to be really key here in that we have seen repeatedly in the past that women do end up stepping away more often than, you know, their male counterparts, you know, when they're parenting. And, you know, when it comes to communities of color, we have seen repeatedly again that they face a much more difficult path when it comes to not only affording childcare, but also when they can't get childcare, it does impact their careers more than their white counterparts.
How about, you know, even parents who are anxious or eager to get their kids back in the classroom, the risk that the kids bring something home, even if the kids themselves don't get all that sick.
Right. And let's not forget the fact that schools are not just filled with children. I mean, they certainly have a ton of adult supervision, not only with teachers, but also, you know, classroom aides and the administrative staff, people, you know, who are in the cafeteria helping prepare lunches, security staff, bus drivers. These are a lot of adults that, particularly when it comes to the school staff side of things, can be a little bit older and certainly in those vulnerable demographics.
Thanks, Megan. Megan Lenhart, senior reporter at CNBC Make It.
The T-shirt is a menswear staple. Unfortunately, the basic tee we love has its issues, right? Shrinkage, bacon neck, fading, and stretching, to name a few. But the modern take on the classic T-shirt from Cuts Clothing has completely changed the game. With their amazingly soft, custom-engineered Pika Pro fabric, Cuts T-shirts have an athletic, tailored-looking fit that's comfortable anywhere, from a day in the office to a night on the town, and everything in between. I have to say, I love my Cuts T-shirts. I've worn them casually with shorts and sandals, but also under my suit jacket in more professional settings. They're one of the most comfortable, durable, and fashionably flexible shirts I've ever owned. Plus, they're pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free, and hold their shape over time, no matter what style you prefer. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Again, cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Who would have thought that the COVID-19 pandemic, which has brought so much anxiety, frustration, and misery to millions of Americans, would actually deepen the bonds of many families and friends? This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka has a look at the unexpected consequences.
The pandemic has deepened the bonds of many families and friends in unexpected ways. Many have turned to Zoom and other online platforms to reconnect with people they haven't talked to or seen in years. But will we still want to do this when this thing's all over? Claire Ansbury is with the Wall Street Journal. Claire, why did many of us reach out to people we haven't talked to in ages?
Well, part of it was that everybody was stuck at home and they couldn't go out and see people in person. And then there was also the real fear and uncertainty with the pandemic, not knowing when you might see somebody again, and also concerned about their health and well-being. So there was a lot of people initially saying, are you okay? What's going on? And for some families and friends, that's continued.
Have the frequency of those communications lessened since March?
It seems to be that way. I mean, people who were meeting weekly have decided to do it every other week. People are already looking at, you know, somebody where they started out with 12 people, now there's 7 people, and there's more of a joining when people can join but not feeling obligated, which is actually a good thing because you don't want people to feel obligated and to not want to do it. I also think, you know, there is that fatigue, Zoom fatigue, that people are feeling too when they're having more meetings, work meetings and everything. But, you know, for some people, it has continued on a weekly basis. They just don't know how long it's going to last in the future when everybody starts going back to work.
And Claire, your story mentioned that people tend to feel more connected when they had a smaller group chat rather than inviting a lot of people in. Why is that?
Well, a bigger group is the it's kind of like going to a seminar, somebody said. You know, you feel like you are, you know, at work or something like that. And there's also, there's everybody takes turns talking, which is a good thing. But when there's so many people there, there's not as much give and take, the feeling is. It's not like a regular conversation.
We're speaking with Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal. Claire, your story also noted that some people actually like the old-fashioned phone call rather than a video chat. Why is that?
Yeah, there's a sense of more intimacy with a phone call. It was really interesting because some families, parents and, you know, children want to see the face of somebody that they love just to make sure they're okay. But other people, one study showed that after video calls, that some people feel lonelier because they see that person and realize how much they miss them, and they're really not sure when they're going to be able to see them again. So it's really a lot of personal preference. I do think the family that was talking about, I really needed to see their face and make sure they were okay. They said, you know, especially when there was a big outbreak where their children lived. So it was like, oh my gosh, cases are spiking here. I just need to see them and make sure they're okay.
I know you talked to a number of people for your story. What did you find out about what they found out about other people they didn't know before?
Well, it's really, I mean, when a group of sisters, they haven't seen, they're scattered all over the country. They haven't seen each other for 7 years since their mom's 80th birthday. And, you know, they just said things like, we started texting book recommendations and TV recommendations regularly. And that was something that they just didn't do. I guess, you know, people grow apart or, you know, just don't keep those connections. And she said that one sister was taking online art classes and was sharing what she had done. And she, you know, the sister said, I never knew she had that talent.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Claire Ansbury. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, the newest version of Back to School Anxiety. Let's talk about some numbers other than the stock market. Just how much could you save, for example, in 1 year by switching to Harry's? You have your choice. You could buy 26 cups of coffee in New York City, or 3 deep dish pizza dinners in Chicago, or, keeping it closer to home, 6 months of Netflix. At $2 a blade, Harry's can save you hundreds over time, but they don't skimp on quality. With Harry's, I get a smooth, close shave, and the precision trimmer blade makes it easy to get the tough spots around my goatee. Get your own Harry's trial set by going to harrys.com/Gordon, and if you love it, blade refills are delivered directly to your door on your schedule. With or without a subscription, it's super convenient. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go.
Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving and saving today.
Day-to-day lives have been disrupted due to the COVID-19 pandemic, right? Goes without saying, which can bring on many new feelings for children. And now, right when parents are preparing for their kids' return to school, it's important for parents and caregivers to help children understand these complicated emotions they may feel as they prepare to go back to the classroom. Here's how from licensed professional counselor Lee Richardson, founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. Lee, explain the anxiety.
Well, I think both children and adults are anxious about it. Are we going to go to school? Are we going to stay home? Are we going to have to wear a mask? I mean, there's a tremendous level of concern on the adult level, and the children pick up on that. And when they know that their parents are anxious or worried about something, they worry about it even more.
All right. So I was going to say, kids take their cues from us. So what should we be communicating then? Because we at this point, nobody even knows everything.
Well, and you make a good point. We don't know what to communicate, but that doesn't mean that we stop communicating. I think that we need to check in every day. You need to know what your kids know about returning to school because you don't know what they see on screen time. Kids pick up everything that's going on around them. And I think that touching, you know, checking in with your child every couple of days, okay, we know school's going to be coming up in the next month. How do you feel about that? And listen to them. Let them tell you what their concerns are.
Do you believe that there are more mental health problems for children being away from school than, say, the anxiety of going to school during a pandemic?
You know, that's a hard question because there are some kids that need that social interaction. They need to be around other kids. And there are some kids that are going to have a really hard time learning online. It's very difficult. And I think that some kids are anxious about going. So I think that, you know, it depends on where your situation is, how your family is responding to it. But regardless, if you talk about it and if you let them know, focus on what you can control. What you can control is you can wash your hands 3 times a day. You can social distance, which is really hard for kids. But you can wear your mask. Almost try to find a way to make a gain out of it.
We're speaking with Lee Richardson, licensed professional counselor, also founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. And we're talking about a return to school during coronavirus. And maybe your kid has anxiety. Maybe you have anxiety about it. So how about some of these coping skills? You talked about worry about things you can control, like hand sanitizer, washing your hands, maybe wearing a mask. What else?
Absolutely. And I would encourage my kids to, just like I do my clients, look for the positive. Every day we have 3 times more positive events in our life than negative. That's what research shows. But when we're in a fear state, we're looking for the negative. We're looking for the bad news. So I think one coping skill is every day, I want you to tell me 2 good things that happened to you today. And help your kids stay in the moment. Don't go, okay, school's starting, but it's 4 weeks away. We have a lot of time that we can plan and we can get ready for it. Don't let them jump ahead to school starting. Because if you're lost in the past or worried about the future, you're going to be anxious.
For lack of a better term, as a child, can you mature away from or mature out of certain anxieties?
I think that if you have a good support system in place, you can learn to deal with them, but you've got to have the right support system in place. And as a child, you cannot be that support system for yourself.
Thanks, Lee. Lee Richardson, licensed professional counselor, also founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Coming up next, a plan as you near retirement.
Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
If you're a year or two away from regularly tapping your portfolio for income, what's the game plan given today's volatility? Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com is in that boat and has been tinkering with his investment mix, trying to figure out how he'll generate cash once he's retired. One surprising result, he has more in stocks today than he's had at any time in the past 3 years, and he's thinking of increasing that allocation. He's here to share what he's doing. Jonathan, your plan.
So, Gordon, today I'm age 57, and in 2 years, I will be 59 and a half, which is the magical age when you can start to tap your retirement accounts without having to pay tax penalties. So with that in mind, I've been thinking about how it is I'm going to generate retirement income. And as I was thinking about that, I came up with this notion that what I really have is four goals. And you know, one of my goals, and I think it's a goal that a lot of people should consider, is generating a stream of income that I can't outlive. And the best stream of income that you can't outlive is Social Security, which is why you often see the advice to delay Social Security until age 70 so you get that largest possible benefit, mm-hmm. And I intend to do that. But to supplement that, what I'm also considering doing is making a series of purchases of what's called an immediate fixed annuity. An immediate fixed annuity is essentially like buying your own private pension. You give a lump sum to an insurance company, and then they cut you a check every month for the rest of your life. A lot of people are reluctant to do that because they worry they're going to write that check and then go under the bus the next day.
Right.
And my plan to get around that fear is to make a series of smaller purchases, perhaps starting as early as age 60. So that way, you know, I can be pretty confident I'll get at least some income back from my annuity purchases because I'm starting the purchases relatively early on.
All right. So if you're going to make a series of them, you might make a purchase 1 year and then wait another year or two and make another purchase? How do you plan to do that?
I haven't got an exact schedule, Gordon, but my plan is, yes, I might buy at age 60 and then maybe again at age 62 and age 65. And beyond allowing me to sort of monitor my health and say, whoa, you know, I just had a bad visit with the doctor, maybe I'll knock off these annuity purchases.
Yeah.
The other thing it allows me to do is to buy from multiple insurance companies, thus reducing the risk that any one insurer will get into financial trouble. And on top of that, should interest rates rise from today's anemic level, I'll be able to take advantage of those higher interest rates with my next annuity purchase. And indeed, one of the things that is great about an immediate fixed annuity is the income generated by these things has dropped far less than the yield on bonds. I mean, today, bond yields are at half or less of what they were at the beginning of the year. By contrast, immediate fixed annuity yields are pretty much the same as they were at the beginning of the year because a lot of it depends upon life expectancy. You're essentially betting that you're going to live a reasonably long life, but of course some people who buy immediate annuities don't, and as a consequence that allows the insurance company to pay more to people who continue to breathe and collect their checks.
I'm speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. One of the other goals you have for yourself is to have this pool of cash you can count on. How do you pull that off?
So historically, you know, I've been pretty conservative with my bond portfolio. I've owned short-term bonds, high-quality corporates, also some intermediate-term inflation index bond funds. But looking at what's happened to bond yields this year, you know, you get very little risk.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, he's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. DellTechNet.com.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. What's wrong with the hottest new mobile game for fans of Scrabble Go, released last month? Well, plenty. Complaints range from glowing treasure chests to the difficulty of finding the dictionary to the number of widowers in the chat room. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
There's a new mobile version of Scrabble called Scrabble Go, which is riling up the fans of its predecessor. As Valerie Borline of the Wall Street Journal tells us, the falling tiles, sparkling jewels, and chat functions aren't for everyone. Valerie, why did Hasbro update the game?
Well, you know, the game has been around on mobile phones since the beginning of mobile phones, right? Since 2008, 2009. The Scrabble has had an app. It was functionary, it was simple, and it fell far behind some of its competitors in popularity, particularly Words with Friends. And so it was time, Hasbro said it was time to just reimagine Scrabble Go into this colorful, exploding, baby dragon-esque type app.
Who did Hasbro hook up with to make some changes?
Well, there's a company, they originally were paired up with the gaming giant Electronic Arts, which is a household name for their Xbox and console games. But in this case, Hasbro branched out to a smaller outfit called Scopely that focuses on mobile apps. And the ones that we're, you know, probably familiar with that are free to download but entice you with ads or perks you can buy within the game. And Scopely is a growing player in the mobile gaming space.
So, Valerie, what don't traditionalists like about this game?
Where do you want me to start? You know, the Scrabble, the original app that's been around for a decade, had a very loyal base of users, many of whom may not have met players that they played regularly around the globe, but met for regular games. They liked that they paid $10 one time for no ads and then had this game to play Scrabble on. And Scrabble Go is sort of totally different model to them. It's there's lots of abilities to earn gems out of sparkling treasure chests. There's ability to get these 3D tiles. You win them by playing all these other kinds of games that aren't Scrabble. They're kind of games within the game that are word games but aren't Scrabble. It's a much more dynamic modern game than a lot of the people that have been playing a long time have a taste for.
We're speaking with Valerie Borline at the Wall Street Journal. I would imagine that board games have held up fairly well during this pandemic. Are companies that have put out original board games ever going to abandon them completely, or are they getting enough out of them that they'll be around?
You know, I'll answer that by saying one of the things that surprised me in this story is there is strong evidence that mobile devices are the primary way we play games, period. Far more than board games, as I think we probably could guess, but also far more than PC games or console games. We play games on our mobile phone, and that is how gaming is done these days. So I do think there's evidence that board game sales are up, and with a game like Scrabble that's been sort of an annuity for Hasbro since 1948, already they're seeing sales of the physical game tick up after the rollout of the app. So we'll see.
Wall Street Journal's Valerie Borline with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for being with us. The beloved lemonade brand Country Time has launched an economic relief program called the Littlest Bailout to help out the littlest entrepreneurs with the smallest of small businesses, lemonade stands. During this pandemic, life has given us lemons, but government restrictions haven't always allowed us to sell lemonade at a stand. The program is offering $100 to kids whose lemonade stands have been affected by the coronavirus. Social distancing guidelines, of course, have hindered the typical foot traffic that lemonade stands usually receive. Country Time says it hopes to help kids preserve the values of lemonade stands, honest work, and entrepreneurship, while putting a little juice back into the economy. All participants need to submit is an essay answer on how they would use their, quote, stimulus check and a photo of the lemonade sign that the child was going to use but cannot use. Kids ages 14 and under can apply with parental permission. Through August 12, 1,000 winners will be chosen. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.